thank you to Janet, and thank you to everyone that's here this afternoon and has been the rest of the day and all the speakers. It's been really amazing to learn more about Singing New Earth for us and Singing Over, but everyone, I imagine it was really great. We're really delighted to be devoting the second part of the day to Women's Independent Cinema House. Really lucky to have Judy here, who's the founding member of Witch from Liverpool. And we've, so kind of a little bit of a backstory about Singing Over's relationship to Witch or our knowledge of it. A few years ago, we had two paid interns that were working with the collection who decided to put together their own event. They programmed an event as part of the Anti-University. And one of the one of our interns, Becky Buckman, who we were hoping actually to conclude today, but of course she had to work, was really interested in particularly the film we're showing later on, A Tribute to Black Women. And had this idea about doing a remake. But that was when I always knew we had these films, but I hadn't really kind of, we hadn't had much contact with Anne. Sort of like, we'd send an email when a screening was happening and she'd be like, that's fine. But we also had other films by Witch in the collection. We had a film called Ella that was also made by Black Witch, a film called That Time of the Month as well. But we also had like paper archive material such as this booklet, which is great, and which had told us about all these other films. These are two I just mentioned, but the other films that were made by Witch, such as Women in Sport, Women Making Connections, that was about women working with IT, is that right? Mm-hmm. But we didn't have any sort of, we only had a connection with Anne Carney, one of the filmmakers of Tribute to Black Women. And then more recently, we were asked to be involved with an event in Manchester looking at films that were made in the northwest of England from Singing Over, which started a bit of like an excavation project around works in the collection that were made in the northwest, which actually isn't a huge amount. Quite a lot of material that was made in the north, but it was actually mainly Witch that was that. And that was when I was started with trying to find Judy. There's an amazing resource of something Judy's written about her, the founding of Witch. But yeah, that's just like a backstory of how this began and how we kind of really wanted to, sort of through Becky's project, but also sort of research that we've been doing into kind of making these connections again. And I've just, this is just a slide which was made from a flyer that I found in the British Artist Film and Video Study Collection, which also reflects on something that Juju said about the fact that when Witch started, you were initially sort of a screening group and you were showing films from circles and cinema of women. And I just thought I'd highlight the fact that there was this one of these flyers that said all these different feminist films that Witch were showing in Liverpool at the Open Eye, which you'll talk a little bit about. But it was also interesting that Felicity Sparrow, one of the founding members of Circles, had gone to Liverpool to show these films, these early women's silent films with contemporary work. And we're very lucky to have Jeanette Ildron here today, who is a founding member of Circles, who we have an exhibition opening at Lux tomorrow. This is the 40th anniversary of both Circles and Cinema of Women. Just a little bit of a plug, but yeah, if anyone's interested, and we're showing two films, Folk Eye by Jeanette Ildron and Shadow of a Journey by Tina Keen, which are both the first films of those filmmakers, and they were included in the original Circles broadsheet catalogue. But yeah, that's a slight aside, but it is kind of relevant, and just interesting that these women's organisations had these dialogues, that we also, there's some other, so this is like an early way you could rent things from Circles, and this is again from this document that just really explains sort of what the organisation was about, but again, Judy can talk a bit about this. Well, but I just wanted to say a bit about how, when we were putting this day together, the idea of looking at the collective in the collection was, the different feminist collectives and collaborations. It was really hard because, in a way, that could be like a week's worth of events, that we have so many different collectives that were formed around the same time as Witch, such as Lee's Animation Workshop, Sheffield Film Co-op, Steel Bank Films,
Flannel.
Red Flannel was about the go to. Mm. We also have a link to which, for a member, a Red Flannel from Cardiff, Video Vera, Vera Productions from Leeds. And so, and this was all kind of related to the workshop declaration, which we've also.
Yeah, brought a copy
Judy
of that.
Very kindly bought a copy of the original workshop declaration from 1982. But yeah, I just wanted to give a short background just to say that there is so much more of this, you know, interesting connections with the collection and where these films were shown at different sort of and very, you know, there were these London specific, but it was much more sort of national, these kind of different projects. But yeah, just it's great to have you here, and if you want to talk a little bit about the beginning.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Well, I thought I was just going to introduce this film now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you're happy to.
We just started out as this. It's great to be here. I'm really great. It's really great to be dug up. And I've dug a load of videos out.
Oh, yeah. And the other amazing thing. So, and this is something I was going to mention after this. Judy very kindly brought some of the tapes of the other films that we haven't got in the collection. And one thing to note, sort of moving on from what Juana was talking about with the. These are all works that we either have that came from pneumatic tape or VHS. So the first video is going to be from VHS, so excuse the quality, but we'd rather be able to share this work with you than, you know, that would be a sort of...
Yeah, it's going to be a bad copy probably. It's going to look a bit sticky.
Yeah.
But I've not seen it for years myself, so I don't know how to introduce it. Other than to say that we'd been screening for a while, and we'd been starting to work full time voluntarily, not getting paid to do anything, like sinning over us, not getting paid to do anything. And we would had to become an organisation to receive the money to hire the films. When we showed films, we always had a filmmaker with them. And so Merseyside Arts were trying to give us money, so we had to form a company limited by guarantee, and we slowly realised that what we wanted to be was a cooperative. And co-ops were very big at the time. Co-ops thrive under the Tory government. You've got to put it in context, like, because the Tories like co-ops because that's you being a business person. You're active as a business. You are, you're a capitalist, basically. We had a thriving CDA, and I was very close to the person that worked for the MCDA, Merseyside Cooperative Development Association. And she just says, oh, let's commission a film to promote all the co-ops around Merseyside. So I think it's six different co-ops. And that really is the introduction to the film, but I do want you to notice there's a beautiful section where my good friend Mandy, who still works for News, is a member of the News from Nowhere cooperative, she's taken metal shutters off the windows of their building. They've got to have metal shutters on the window of their building because regularly they were getting attacked by fascists. So several times they get Molotov cocktails thrown into the place. So I wanted to say that, but she does look like an Amazon. She really does. And there you are. It was the end of the hippie movement, and it was the start of the feminist and co-op movement.
Thank you.
Black Women's Film Collective, with Megis, with more films, with the support of Black Phone House as well. So maybe Bea can talk a little bit about, I mean, having been both involved with Rahana at Black Phone House and then also Black Witch.
Yeah.
Do you want to add?
I've been involved with sort of filmmaking, the same as Judy, in Liverpool for the past sort of 25 to 30 years. And it came, I came through Open Eye Collective, which I think Judy mentioned earlier on, because at the time there was no platform for us to get involved. And how I got involved was I was taking photographs, but I had nowhere to develop or anyone to help me develop these photographs. So through the collective, which ran a studio, I was able then to get my photographs, because I was always documenting stuff doing still photography, and through the Open Eye Collective, you know, I was able to get my work sort of, you know, developed. And then it was through that collective that I came through, out of Witch, and then out of what we call the Arm of Black Witch, and then all it's, you know, and then that all emerged into women's filmmaking and my being involved as a producer. So also I think what you forgot to tell you as well, I mean, we're going back to the 70s, 72, 73, and we weren't able to get any work at all. If we applied to any work, we couldn't get any work because we didn't have a union ticket. And if we applied for a union ticket, we couldn't get, you know, they wouldn't give it to us because we had to have a job. So we were in this precarious situation, and through the Workers' Declaration... The Workshop Declaration. We were then able, all the different collectives throughout the country, well, there was only about half a dozen of us at the time, through them we were able to get our union ticket, and that enabled us, with the emergence of Channel 4, to actually then start getting our work shown. And we were very fortunate at the time because there was Alan Fountain, who was the commissioning editor for Channel 4, and there was a slot, used to be called People, there was People to People slot and the 11th hour, and independents could get their work shown on these slots. And we, as a collective in Liverpool, were able to get our work shown through that and able to get other work shown as well. And people started then to notice us. So through Black Witch, what we were able to do, we started, and we were able to get a bit of money as well. But one of the films that you're going to see, they haven't done nothing. I know it doesn't sound grammatically correct, but there's a reason for that. Was a film that was commissioned by Alan Fountain after the riots in 1981. And one of the things I did was they asked me to make this film with a group, a community group of young people. And I thought about it and I thought, well, how am I going to make this film? Because they wanted us to make a film one way about race riots. But when I started talking to the group who I was going to work with, it wasn't about race riots at all. It was something different. So what I also did is, if you got a commission from Channel 4, you had to have a company. So I formed the community group into a production company. They became, and then they employed me to make the film, and then they employed all the professionals, and then they became the assistant to the professionals. And that way, through by them, we had our union tickets. So then the group were able to apply once the film was finished through the union, get other work, and that was the basis of collectivism, how we made that film. We made the film we shot it over a year. It was a long production. We shot it on 16 mil because they gave us a lot of money in those days. It was great. But what's happened to the film now is it's quite fortunate, really, because I'm going back in the day with Channel 4, if you showed your film three times, you then own the rights of it. So we were fortunate. So that group still own the rights to the film. So they get the residue from anything when it's shown. Which is good. So it's a community film now, so the money goes back into the community. So Rahana, who I met up with over 18 months ago, wanted to make something for the biennial, and so she said she wanted to form a collective around making a piece, an installation. And so I work at Blackburn House, which is Blackburn House Education Women's Centre. So we got talking, and so she got a group of women together. And then they made the film, and then they said, well, why don't we use some of your footage from 81 in this film? And so that's how that film was made. But so that's one arm, that's Rahana's film. Then I've worked with Witch for, I don't know how many years now. And we've made numerous films out of Witch, out of Black Witch. And the same principle applied, that if anybody came to work on the film, we had to think about what was going to happen to them afterwards, because we just didn't want to make films and then they'd gone away. You know, we did the interview, thank you very much. So also by getting ourselves involved with the union, which was really instrumental for us, we then brought the union down to Liverpool. And I think, do any of you remember Brookside? Mm-hmm. Right. Well, Diane Abbott, believe it or not, she was our equality officer at the time. So we got the union down to Liverpool because there was this thing going on Brookside where they were taking all these young people on under the scheme and then sacking them the following year. And nobody was getting any real employment. So we got the union in with Phil Redmond. And so out of Black Witch, we were able to get Barbara. She became a writer. We got the cameraman, who's a very recognised cameraman now, Gary Williams. We got a production manager. And so that's led to them now, you know, full-time jobs in the industry. And that's the way I've always worked, basically. And we, you know, over the years, because I think it's really important. So we formed Pigeon Productions, which was another pigeon, as in pigeon English. I mean, we're all talking the same language as filmmakers. And the idea of that was to bring writers, directors, everybody together to provide a platform so that they could make the work. Because, as you know, funding is just being cut and cut and cut. And we've been fortunate in one way, but not in another. Because the money's just gone out to the BFI, and we were good in the early days, but not now. So that's a little bit about me, and so you know, we show the films.
Thank you. Everyone again for coming, and it's really great just to repeat what everyone's been saying all day, but it's really, really good for Cine Nova to be invited to do things like this, because a lot of the work that Cine Nova do is kind of trying to reconnect with films that have kind of fallen out of distribution, or that that Cine Nova have lost contact with over the years. So it's just great that we're able to do this panel discussion, and that Judy and Bea were able to join us as well. And very excited to have Deborah too, who recently did a now showing with us. So it's good to bring the kind of present scene of it in too. So I guess kind of like something that I kind of wanted to start off this panel discussion with was kind of the idea of collectives and kind of how we understand collectives and how they kind of like become present in your creative careers, because I guess like going from like the workshop declaration, it's like something that was amazing when it existed, it doesn't exist anymore, but it kind of forced you into working collectively back in the day. So it kind of, you know, it maybe changed slightly what you were originally thinking of, or like it became something that was like necessary, and how that kind of affected your practice. And then just thinking about how that obviously was coming out of a time of funding as well, that was moving towards a more entrepreneur style of like Arts Council funding, so that you would have to be able to produce a kind of profit from your work in some way as well, and that how that kind of model took over eventually also. So kind of also like, what is your experience nowadays? So I guess if someone wants to kind of respond to that in terms of like talking about maybe your experience with the workshop declaration, how that affected your practice.
And I think the workshop declaration was anything but entrepreneur. I think the concept was to give people the means of production, working class and black people and women, people in, say, the miners' strike, or you know, they were sick of being represented, as Brett B said, they didn't want to be represented as like black guys playing snooker in Toxteth, you know. The idea was to integrate the people you were making the film with, not about, could also get behind the camera in the scripting and become part of a collective and be like B does, work with people for years maybe. So they got the power of the media. They got that, you know, they're making this film about us. We are making the film. And that kind of collective working was spread within the subject. As the workshop declaration said that minimum of four people in the cooperative or group would be the core of that kind of working, and they would have mixed technical abilities and work in that way. It was a way to get because, I mean, let's face it, the media was the posh. It was like people that went to Eton. It was people went to Cambridge. It was really an upper class white male hands at that moment. You can't believe, you know, they all like. It was a closed shop. It's like it was very hard to get into that union, but very few people were active in the union because they were too rich. They didn't have to fight for anything, you know. They were rolling in it, and you know what? They're still going. They're going to Africa. It's all public school boys still doing wildlife films all over the world. You know, make no doubt about it. So. They weren't active in the union, and I think that's how come we could get Channel 4 wanted people to be able to make stuff. Channel 4 were the real people that knocked on the door. They wanted real films about real people, and it was Channel 4 that knocked on the door, and the BFI were after the art, really. And it was because the rich people didn't have to go to the union meetings that we got everything through. It was old hippies basically, and a lot of them were male. It was old hippies were trying to give people the access to the media that fought for that workshop declaration, and that we didn't want to have the wages that we got. We wanted to have, you know, this is why Witch had, you know, we had 5 and 6 members doing job shares and all kinds of things, because the wage, you know, it was 40. I'm not on £14,000 a year now, and it was 30, 40 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Minimum wage, that was the minimum wage you could work for. So it's like
£10.
Yeah. It's like, so there was a strong political force about that cooperative working. And I've forgotten the question.
Also, with under the working the workshop declaration, we also had there was also we formed the Black Media Association within the union, and yes, there was people like Tariq Ali, Darkest Howe, Stuart Hall, Diane Abbott was there. There was all the big names also from Warwick University, and we formed the Black Media Association. And that was also because we also had the expertise with people from Warwick, from the cultural department within Warwick University, and they still wasn't getting their work, believe it or not, heard. And so there was a movement in that with Channel 4, and that's when we got the first sort of series, again through Alan and through Channel 4, and we did a big series called Bacchanal. And that was looking at black artists right throughout the UK and beyond. And that went on, and we couldn't believe it because it went on prime time television on a Saturday evening at 7 o'clock.
Sorry,
it was Bacchanal. You can look for it. There was a big series that we did through the black media, through the union influence. And it was again to get recognition of people like Tariq, because he did. He worked with Diverse Productions, and so they were doing like the political arm of everything and getting the politics through as well. And then there was Stuart Hall, of course, on the whole cultural sociology part, getting that through. And so we had all of that behind us, as well as the artistic creativity from ourselves to push through things.
I guess it's quite strange as well, because I feel like at that point in sort of the UK history, when like with like the sort of government that was in power at that time as well, it's very strange that there was this access to this money. I mean, we see it with stuff that comes up from GLC as well. There was this moment of like really, really funding different voices to kind of put forward a kind of counter narrative to this kind of overwhelming government that was trying to really suppress people. And I wonder, like, I mean, I know Deborah, is Random Acts through Channel 4 still the one, because you did one with them,
yeah,
didn't you? So it's kind of like that. How do you feel that there is that kind of support network coming out again for younger filmmakers? Or
no, I think there's limitations. So when I was working with Random Acts, it was through like a 3-year program with ICA. However, they only got funding for 3 years.
Right, yeah.
And then they've now started like a new kind of scheme with Channel 4. But no, I would say it's a lot harder.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then do you find that, like, in your own work, in your kind of practice, when you're doing, like, when you have to work, when you're working with collectives, is that out of a necessity for you? Or do you feel like it's something as well that you're kind of interested in with your...
Yeah, definitely. So the kind of main collective I was working with was So Feel Uncomfortable from 2014 to 2018. And it was kind of put together through the artist Barbie Asante and curator Teresa Cisneros, and it was done through an open call to the Innova at the time, who were still based in Rivington Place in Shoreditch, and they were kind of looking for young people to kind of have a contemporary take on the film Baldwin's Nigger. But it was also, I think, a kind of moment in time that a lot of the people in the collective, including myself, were kind of like poor people of colour who were kind of coming out of university or art school systems and kind of having this overwhelming sense of alienation within them. And like a couple of years later, like, why is my curriculum white? And a lot of kind of decolonizing kind of movements kind of came up. So it was like a quite a special and important time. Mm-hmm. And I think we kind of, those of us who were kind of from poor kind of backgrounds, we kind of came together and we were kind of interested in it because we were kind of looking for other people to work with who were kind of going through what we were kind of going through.
Mm-hmm. And it's something that's like still, I mean, it still hasn't been spoken to. I mean, at Goldsmiths at the moment, obviously there's Occupy Goldsmiths because there's been a racist incident that they're not been dealing with, and there's all these demands, and it's just, you know, there's like, there still isn't that space being, I guess, allowed for people that don't fit to kind of white middle class mm-hmm. narrative, even though I guess somewhere like Goldsmiths is meant to be the sort of radical space does have that. So yeah, it's like, yeah, how do you kind of make work now, and how do you kind of keep a sort of space going for your own voice within that too. I guess also, like, how did, so in terms of going through these sort of workshop structures and then that money then not being there anymore, how did you kind of progress on from that, do you feel, in your own practices?
You talking to
yeah,
me?
Sorry, either one of
you. We didn't lose our money like that. Open Eye was, if you like, the mothership. They had the equipment and studios and things like that to make films, and they were the leaders in Liverpool for yourselves and for Which. And it got stuck in a place where we were having to move because there was a motorway coming through, this big bus station and stuff coming, and we were going to go to a different building, and we were stuck in the middle. We were trying to form a cooperative of Women's Independent Cinema House, Open Eye Film and Video, an animation group, News from Nowhere, who you saw there, and Community Productions Merseyside, who were after a franchise as well. And that's a lot of people, that's a lot of thoughts to try and get together, and there was a dissolving of that. So that was Community Arts Trust, which just failed in the end because we couldn't get to agreement. Mm-hmm. And so and then the City Council, the Merseyside Council had fallen. City Council went bankrupt again, and so we just lost our funding. So many other workshops continued after we did. So they'd have different answers.
I think also, sorry, Julie, I think what happened, that money was because Phil Redman came in with his company, Brookside. And so a lot of the money then was aimed, I think.
I disagree there, because Brookside had been going for a while and Liverpool started to get famous, so Brookside was going.
I think it was a lot of the money.
Fact came up, Eddie Berg and Fact, and it was bums on seats all of a sudden.
You know, it was, you know, we would have had a fully unionised access to the media for the people situation, but what we've ended up now is an art house cinema, which just caters for the arty.
Yeah,
but they made us sign up for that in the original plans, because they came to us to ask us, would we use this building? And so we were all invited in the first and the initial plans with Eddie Berg.
I wasn't invited. I would never have signed up to it. I didn't go into it for 10 years.
It's there now, and there's nothing we can do about it.
What were the sort of forces that separated it from the sort of grassroots community organising to something like
FACT?
But I mean, what prompted the sort of support of FACT over the support of?
We were strong political grassroots based, wanting to make films, wanted to be the voice of the actual people, and Eddie Berg wanted to make art house films. There isn't even production means on that site.
Yeah.
You know, when Liverpool got the Capital of Culture, they were upstairs drinking champagne while people I knew that were selling tickets, they didn't even get a bit of the champagne. Really, that was, you know, whereas we were a force to be frightened of. That's why we were sacked. It was really powerful.
Mm-hmm. And they seemed to take away, they just didn't want us around, because we tried and tried getting different funding for, you know, and in the end we came together to fund, because we knew we had the expertise and the skills. So we just came together and we started making productions without any money. And hence we formed a different film, and then we were just screening wherever we could, because that was the way to go. Because all the money had gone to FACT.
Louise, do you maybe want to talk a wee bit about what you do at Qubit, in terms of, because I guess that you're kind of on the other side in terms of being someone that is like on the curatorial side of that. So like how you're kind of, I guess, trying to change that way, but just being about bums on seats or a certain type of art audience to get in the stuff that you do in the work that you've been doing.
Me and Deborah worked for many years at a gallery called The Showroom, and there was a program there called Communal Knowledge, which was all around sort of thinking about longer term support for collaborative projects and talking to the issues at stake of a certain community or within certain like cultural work being made that wasn't sort of subscribing to the white cube sort of neoliberal pushing of individual art making. I guess sort of through that, it really felt like there is like that thing of finding like alliances or solidarities, or I mean, when you talk about In Open Eye, all of the different projects and sort of networks community groups that use the space, I guess I feel like now, like the sort of the hope within sort of contemporary art sort of spaces is that there potentially could be like an openness to sort of to share and have systems of co-support and allow like different sort of, and also like funding wise you can sort of parasite offer the arts funding to support other things to happen that wouldn't be supported otherwise.
There was a group called First Take that still exists out of community productions Merseyside, which came out of Open Eye. And Blackwitch was funded till about 10 years ago, wasn't it? Was it less?
Yeah, I would say about 10
So Witch
years.
Actually lasted 21 years, which is a long time, really. A long time. And this First Take is still producing films with the community in community consultation. So I'm just showing my bitter side. There still is stuff going on out there.
One of the things we actually, as filmmakers, again, we formed a platform called Pigeon, the Producers Integrated Network Initiative Development. And the idea of that platform, and we were going for 10 years, was to bring those individual filmmakers together, writers, directors, camera people, to start working together collectively. And then if one or other of us got a commission, everybody came to work on that production. So everybody was in work. And then, so when the strategy we had was, if applications came up, one of us would apply and then everybody would work on that production if it went through. And then we'd start applying to, for different sources of money to try and keep us all going. And it actually seemed to, it was working for us. And the idea of that was just to keep us all going in work, basically.
I don't know if I should open it out for questions, if anyone's got a question in the audience.
No questions.
Can I ask a question? It's been just such a fascinating afternoon, and I'm just sort of thinking of sort of drawing some of the lessons that we were, we came to in the morning, and we spoke about kind of community archiving sessions, because the thing is that really what you're talking about around labour and around finance is about precarity. And so it's, where, and also the technologies as well, looking at the sort of forms of technology that you're using. And I suppose it's to get some sort of collective thoughts about, how do you feel that the archive could best serve, your work? I mean, even contemporary work, but your work as well that we've sort of seen from the 1990s.
I brought work up in a black bin liner today, it's VHSs that haven't been looked at. Just the very, even if it's looked at and found to be untraced, we can't get it onto a DVD or technology. At least it's been looked at once more, at least it just the very fact it could possibly exist is like a revelation to me. And I think it's good to capture those moments. It was a very different time. There was a lot more money around. Liverpool was fighting, and Merseyside was fighting. There was the miners' strike. There was, there was so much actually happening, and unions had strength. It's hard to believe even that it was the same world.
Yeah.
Really?
We tend to cover, there was the Grunwick strike, we were covering that, and there was Mrs. Desai, who wanted to bring her children. And so we, with being independent filmmakers, we were tending to cover a lot of these issues, which nobody else was covering.
Yes.
Which was really important, and we felt that was the type of film that people needed to see.
And protest is starting to, you can feel we're starting to protest again, climate, crisis and emergency. It was good to see. It was amazing that a million people walked the other week, and there was no, I didn't see any riots, I didn't see any police going. I mean, is it real? Is that real? Is that real? Because, we just had, a lot of violence at the time from police. It's amazing to look at those things and wonder why. Are we missing something here? I feel as though we're more in communication through this thing. But there's something... Our souls aren't realise it feels somehow soulless. It feels like people don't have that, let's do this and let's make it and let's... It's that's interesting. Do you get me?
I feel like we're sinning over, look into the history and the work that you've done, it really makes us think about the urgencies that we need to attend to now. And I think this moment where you talk about fact, all the money going to fact, or the Arts Council beginning to, taking over the sort of the whole pot of money, you realise how much we've sort of fallen into a default way of working, or working in organisations that's business model run, that has hierarchies. And I think for Sinanova being sort of precarious and unfunded actually means we can look to other histories or ways of organising and sort of draw from that, or sort of draw it back into how we might imagine it functioning.
Well, with all the skills and talents that people are out there, you can come together and make a film. You don't always need money, because you can edit in your bedroom or on the kitchen table, and if there's something you're passionate about, something you need to go out and shoot it and make it. Okay, you might
and distribute it.
Yeah, and you know, you might only show it in the community, but there's other avenues now where you can, you know, get your stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's not always about getting that, you know, half a million or £1 million to make. You don't need it. You can make it with the skills and talent.
Mm.
And then also, like, thinking about Janet's question, like the archive or the collection, not only like sort of it's an education for us in terms of a process of like administration or distribution or how we might structure that, but also then when, for example, when we invite the now showing artists to look at the films, I mean, it's interesting to hear from you, Deborah, like we look at sort of the archive in terms of how it was organised or run or how we can sort of practice the politics that are the subjects in the content, and then I guess as a filmmaker, like how much, yeah, or like what, how you sort of approach or found looking through the collection, and how that sort of structures into the new production of your work or ideas.
I think so. When I kind of first started video and filmmaking, like I was very much influenced by like Black Audio Film Collective and Sankofa, and the way that they kind of used, they saw archives as living kind of entities. That they used kind of like footage, whether it was from like BBC or whatever, to kind of intersperse it with stuff that they had filmed. So that was kind of my approach to filmmaking myself as well. And this kind of way of having, I also said that it was like resurrecting ghosts of the past with new reflections. So that's kind of the way that I kind of approached to work, which was kind of also in connection with So You Feel Uncomfortable. So it kind of all kind of came together. And this period of time where we're kind of into 2014, we're like, the riots happened in 2011, we didn't get the same funding as they did in the 80s, but there's all these still kind of similar precarious kind of issues. And I think kind of in the work that I even watched with Rahana, I think that's an amazing way of activating the archive.
Yeah, well, that's what I shot in 81 with the collective. And so she used the same approach with the young collective last year, and that was a piece of work. Well, it was an installation that went to the biennial, you know.
So the archive is in the work.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking also of the kind of sort of going back to what sort of Judy and you were saying, that about sort of strategies of protest as well, in terms of how that actually your strategies of work, because I'm interested in what Deborah was saying, that in a way the filmmakers are kind of coming through art schools and being institutionalised, whereas, I mean, really what you're talking about is your own, not DIY practice, I don't want to say it like that, but you kind of collectively learn together.
It's grassroots filmmaking. What the workshop declaration was about, to try and get people the means of production to the people on the ground, as it were, and to get them to, you saw in the co-op one, you saw the woman that worked for MCDA work doing some plastering as well. I mean, she is a multi-talented woman, but she was also a witch. She was also a member of Witch. You know, you want to them to be able to put across how they are and who they are, and not have an art house person coming along and making a beautiful portrait of them, you know.
It's also, that same collective is also happening now, because there's a group in Liverpool called Bedroom Productions, and they're just a group of people that, and they make things in the bedroom, on they've got all the whizzes and gizzes in them, they make all these films. But the problem is, because they said, oh, we want to get it out there, we want to get it on mainstream, but they can't because they're coming, you know, they're using music from here, footage from their film, and it comes to, you know, the whole copyright thing again. And so they just show, so what they do is they've got a projector and they just show us onto a building in the evening. And that's what they're doing. So if it's a nice evening, you can just go to Lodge Lane and watch a film.
I think that's a super important point as well, in terms of like, I guess with the lack of money, like where are the spaces to show the work, where can you share it, how do you share it with people, like in terms of like your practice now, like what's your main sort of, do you find kind of being stuck within gallery space is something that kind of stops a certain narrative, or like do you share it anywhere else, or like how do you feel about that sort of part of what your filmmaking is?
I think it's interesting to think about the demise of community projects, actually, and how, I think, back to the point about being institutionalised, and almost, I feel like for us, kind of my people, like, I kind of went to school with, like, uni was kind of like the only option. It's kind of, and as you know, like, it's getting more and more corporatised, so perhaps maybe 15, 20 years ago, we probably wouldn't have gone down that route. There would have been other kind of vocational things we could have done. And then in terms of sharing, I guess it is all, like, now the internet and Vimeo and Facebook, etc., etc., and also kind of trying to navigate in between gallery spaces and kind of elsewhere, and thinking about means of dissemination. For example, I know there's this idea of, like, exclusivity, especially if you're wanting to show your work in a gallery space. So you may put up, like, a trailer, but you won't put up the whole film because you don't want to give it all away. So I've kind of tried to resist that and just have everything on Vimeo, even though there's kind of, like, people saying that you should professionalise and not, like I said, be more exclusive. I think it's still really important. Kind of, and having, I guess, shared spaces outside galleries.
Yeah, totally.
I'm Emma, Sandra, based at Birkbeck. Just in terms of, there's a number of things that we're doing. I mean, that the universities and colleges are giving spaces where they might have been in Channel 4 or they might have been elsewhere, you know, in terms of allowing for spaces now to talk about the archives of the workshops or talking about essay film or giving space maybe for people to do PhDs in practice to do the interviews, and we've had examples of that for the last day and yesterday as well. So I'm just wondering now, because we know universities are changing, where we're going to go next, really, I suppose, but it is one of the questions. But I'm also curious about, having worked for quite a long time with June Giovanni's Pan-African Cinema Archive, one of the troubles she's having, and we are having as an advisory board trying to support that, and University of Arts and Birkbeck particularly been involved in trying to support her work, is the issue around volunteers, because I'm so thing with Cinenova, volunteers, it's great, there's a lot of energy, a lot of people that volunteer and work with June, but there is a question is, how long can that last for? And maybe we're always talking about spaces that are going to last 5 or 10 years. I mean, the Channel 4 workshop lasted, what, 8 years or something like that, produced all this stuff, and then now we're revisiting it, and we're revisiting it through university funding, maybe things that are paid for by, you know, the AHRC or other ways of getting collaborations when universities are needing to outreach into public spaces to get collaborations, to find pots of money to support artists, curators, filmmakers, archivists, and whatever else. So I'm wondering, just maybe to get some feedback on the experience of being volunteers, and for how long can that last, and, you know, how else does one support the free work? Because in the end, it's very difficult for people just to do free work all the time, and we know that people like John O'Confra, Isaac Julian, others have come out of collective, but they also maybe came out of art schools or professional backgrounds. And therefore, not everyone in the collective is going to go forward, although a number of people still work with both of those artists who found artist spaces. So what's the experience like of Cinenova? But, you know, what do we do when we're in the university, either doing PhDs or, you know, you're doing an MA, which helps your artistic support. We're in the university creating spaces or trying to find grants or money or partnerships. Where can we go for the next few years, I think, is one of the questions I'm asking, and how long can we actually support things? So for June, there's a limited time that she can do free stuff, always organise volunteers or keep the archive going. She needs support grants or she needs spaces, and I'm sure the same goes for Cinenova or any other archive projects we've been talking about today.
I mean, I can speak about Cinenova in terms of, so I'm doing a PhD researching the paper archive of Cinenova. I was on the working group as a volunteer before that. And so, yeah, in a way, like, it's great to have this funding, and I guess if we can try and use that for 3 years to try and sort out the paper archive, which has never been sorted because everyone's always been a volunteer since 2001, so it's been in this kind of mess that, yeah, but you're like, that's kind of not, again, it's like anything, right? Because that money will, I've only funded for 3 years and then that money disappears again. So if I don't manage to like sort it in some way that we can then manage once like I'm not there anymore, yeah, it's a problem. But I guess it's,
yeah,
like,
you might, like the Women's Film and Television History Network that Numbers mm-hmm. Owners are in, you know, we keep getting, different people keep getting bits of money, so the things can roll and, you know,
yeah.
Unless they get bigger and bigger, but still find some more money off, and you might do that, find, not you personally, but someone else might find some more money to keep going another 3 years or 5 years, which is what a lot of people apply for the Arts Council as artists have to do anyway.
Yeah.
Try to find support or to continue. It's not easy.
It does, yeah, it makes it more precarious, and I think that's kind of been the problem that it with sitting over in the past when it has been just volunteers, that there hasn't really been, there's like not ever like enough time to get the funding application in or like sort out something, you know, it's this constant sort of battle with that, and who has the time and who's able to come in and be involved, and how do people become involved with it, and that all becomes very difficult, and yeah, it's, but you're right, I mean, that is how most things also run, I guess, is precarious.
And where do you put the archive? I mean, I think that's the thing. How do you keep archives independent, supported
mm-hmm.
by
About archiving. We were approached by, the new Museum of Liverpool, what used to be the Museum of Liverpool Life, and they've sort of created like a community archive where people can deposit this stuff, and so that's sort of happening, so stuff isn't left in drawers and in cabinets, and you know, when you know, groups move out, so the Museum of Liverpool, they've set something up to start taking that archive from the community, and we started to deposit some of that with them, you know, so it's there and people have got access to it and they can use it and they don't have to pay to use it. So that's what we've started doing, because we see the importance of that, because there's only so long all the stuff on VHS.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because it's all, some of them, we came across some the other week and it's got all this mould on and you know, what do we do with it?
Can Cindy Nova do something like that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's such a good question and impossible scenario, but and a lot of our sort of public programme talk to these exact questions, like the show we did at the showroom in 2010 was called Reproductive Labour, and really it was about making visible the fact that, yeah, we're volunteer run, and how does this continue, or how do we not sort of perpetuate the problems that, yeah, we're sort of working. And then in terms of, because when Circles and Cinema of Women were sort of forced to merge, a lot of the collection did go to the BFI, I think we feel quite passionate about like keeping it an autonomous, independent project. So in terms of how we support that, yeah, obviously we've got this Goldsmiths Collaborative PhD, and we get a lot of support from Lux, and through sort of, you know, our paid jobs, which are in the sort of cultural sector, we, as I said, we sort of parasite off them or find sort of ways to sort of support the work of Cinenova. It's not ideal at all. I guess sort of making it always transparent and part of the conversation feels important. And then, yeah, this question of like, do we go for Arts Council, do we go for funding that might change the way that we can politically operate? Mm. Or, I mean, that's why, like, at the moment, thinking around other structures of organising, whether it be member led or cooperative, or how can we sort of push or keep the sort of grassroots feminist politics and secure funding? Is that possible? I mean, the brilliant thing about Cinenova, obviously, is that it generates an income. You know, 50% of the screening fees goes to the filmmaker and 50% to Cinenova. So if there was a way to invest more time and sort of resources, could we sort of push it to self-finance through, through its very sort of distribution action? But, it's really impossible.
I think that this discussion has to do with sustainability. Mm-hmm. And an issue in a crisis that a lot of people think that they have to be handled by volunteers. Now, and volunteers are absolutely important, but also there are many technical works in archives that if there are not people trained, even volunteers, but if they are not trained on how to do them, they can do more harm to the archive than you helped preserve it. And also, for example, cleaning VHS is something that you have to know how to do and you need the equipment. But I think it's also a little bit reflecting on what's the value of these kind of activities, no? Because also there can be the tendency to think we clean an archive, we recover an archive, and now it's stuck in a library or a university library or something, and then it's kind of dead there. The archive, I think that that's like a big change in the way that we look at archives, does not have something that is static, but that has to be communicating with other things. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really the value that you can give to an archive when it finds these places. I mean, we have never really done an activity on Cine Mujer in Colombia, like the one that you guys did this morning. Of course, far more remote to do something with what collective of women are doing in a city that is 4 hours away from London. So it's finding these dialogues that what can probably give some dynamism to the museums, and also how do you bring them to the classroom now? Because every time that I do, and Catherine invited me to do this workshop last year, but every time that I tell my students first year, and they are coming to be a master's in film archives, but every time that I tell them, what is a film archive for you? The image that everybody has is a rack of organized reels of film, no, that are like totally sorted out. And the archive really has to gain new life. I am very intrigued on how the three films that we watched today target young people in the 80s and recently. No. And so you have to start incorporating those things like social media. You have to make the projects digital, regardless of what is your faith in the digital, because that's the technology that you have available. So you cannot recover an archive only to live in the stacks. As we are planning, we also have to think, how is this going to live in contemporary technologies? Because it's the only way that it can generate new dialogues and continue, no? Which is what you were asking. I think that I have noticed, for example, that in film schools, we do a very bad job on teaching our students about archives and film archives, and making the students aware that they are responsible for taking care of analog media, magnetic media, and their digital assets. Now, I think it's something that has to be incorporated into the curriculum. For example, it has to start with us.
Mm-hmm. Well, archives and distribution, I mean, it's making a film is about distributing it, isn't it, really? It's getting it seen, and I think that's something that the more you distribute, I mean, who is going to want to see all these old films anyway?
You'd be surprised. They're going to be shown for people
to gain interest.
Yeah.
If we keep them somewhere on a shelf, no one would.
That's right. Yeah.
Across the board of any films made by black filmmakers, female, gay, whatever they are, foreign. If they're not exhibited enough, even to an audience of 5 people to start with, they will not gain momentum. And we
have
interest in them, then we have to start that momentum. We need to build it. We need to start exhibiting them, whether it's in the local community, whether it's the cinema at Burbank, whether we make BFI to program this thing, or wherever it is out there, we need to be the one doing the work.
Yes. And you notice that there's lots of little cinemas happening around Liverpool, isn't there? There's about 5 Liverpool's little cinemas. It must be happening in London too, is it?
Yeah. I mean, like Cinenova is, I mean, it's always called a collection as well, and we, I mean, get more email today than we can manage in terms of people wanting to book the films for festivals, screenings, university screenings. Like everything that you see on our website is available to see online or rent it to screen it publicly. So yeah, it certainly feels like a very active archive, if you wish, or collection. Mm.
So you're going to be able to fund yourselves very soon, aren't you?
Well,
just to like go off the point of archives, and I think Bea made an excellent point about the Museum of Liverpool, because I've seen a similar thing. Where I'm from in Croydon, the Museum of Croydon, which is now kind of in this building, which like has got our library as well, and it's a really, really amazing way of presenting a people's history. So local people have submitted in different kind of bits of clothing, bits of archive, just anything kind of building this history of Croydon, and it's really, really well done. It's probably like one of the best installations of a museum I've kind of seen, and it has all these different groups that were important to Croydon, and it's done in a way that's really like really active. So there's people's voices talking about their kind of story, there's objects, and now they're kind of hiring quite a few kind of apprentices, and a friend of mine was working there and kind of took me around. And also another kind of local gallery, Turf Projects, which I've worked at previously, they kind of recently had an artist, Howard Offer, who came in and was working with the Museum of Croydon, and then also Croydon College students, mainly looking as well at like Croydon Pride and some other kind of specific events that happened. And I think that was a really beautiful way of like reigniting conversations around the archive and putting it in a contemporary space. And so I think, yeah, kind of, I don't know in terms of maybe how it would work in keeping cooperatives autonomous, but I think local councils is often a kind of overlooked kind of thing, maybe like rooting it in a specific kind of place in London or wherever.
Yeah, can I just come back on that? That, you know, Bishopsgate, for example, has taken on a lot of photographic archives and left-wing archives, and the May Day rooms where Jim Jamani's archive is, and saves, you know, problematic issues, providing a space for people with archives. And I think much as we might be suspicious of the term heritage, when I'm talking about pots of money being there for 5 or 10 years,
yeah.
Now obviously heritage and through museums, and if we force university libraries to have spaces for archive but also keep it live, are the places often to go at the moment. Not that I'm heading off to a museum, but you know, they're very also have problems with funding, but they are actually accessing things like the Heritage Fund or using community projects in order to make archive live and accessible.
Mm-hmm. And libraries as well.
Libraries as well, yeah.
We did a similar project with the museum through the Heritage Lottery. They did a project with the community called L8 on Scene,
mm-hmm.
where they brought all the community together and their footage, photographs, and then that was a big exhibition in the museum, but the ownership of it belongs to the community. But then that archive of photographs and bits of footage from 1960 and stills, all of that now is together under that collection.
Which is important, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then the whole history, one of the things that they're doing as well, there's a group of people, it might sound a bit morbid, but if you're looking for the history of a community, you get it through funerals. And you might say, why?
Yeah, no.
Because it's at those occasions where you'll see the whole of the community, and that's all being documented at the moment. I know it's a group of people are actually doing that with the permission of the people, you know, who they're... And it seems to be, and if you're looking at a history of a community, that's where you'll see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to record that history, yeah.
Yeah. I think also just one point as well about Cine Nova and the way that it's been functioning, since it didn't have any funding, is that, you know, it's kind of separate from, like, circles and Cinema Women, because it was, you know, wasn't directly working with filmmakers. Like, we've kind of inherited this collection, so all the work that we do is this kind of, and Cine Nova still does, is that it's kind of like, you know, about like the way that Cine Nova activates itself again is by talking to the organisations that were involved. So, you know, we try and find out if it was made with, like, so we did a project recently, exhibition with Women in the Law Collective. One of those films was made with a charity, Women in Prison. So, you know, we went to Women in Prison, we said, do you have a copy of this film? They didn't have a copy of this film. So, like, you know, that's one way of, like, that collection being opened again. And I think that, rather than, like, I guess the work that Cine Nova is always trying to do is kind of, yeah, like, give that stuff back, because we kind of, it's not ours and we don't kind of have this authority over it, and that, yeah, I think that's like the constant drive with that. Anyway, sorry.
Just to respond to this idea of how universities are library institutions and trying to care for archive material, picking up on the point about the archives in Columbia and this idea of training being really necessary. I was really sad to hear that Camberwell College are closing down the book arts conservation group. They have a very world-leading course in book conservation. They do a lot of work with book arts and artists who make works are very delicate, have archival needs. They've been, a world leader in training to do that. And I think some of the things happening in film, where there's a lack of investment in the conservation skills and the training, and I think it's a shame when we're talking about these sort of short-term investments and short-term funding, that institutions are kind of giving centres short-term funding, kind of inviting people to show material, but they're not doing this long-term investment, and there's no vocational option really if other forms of funding are being lost to film groups that have that training skill.
Exactly, heritage funding is often set you up as an enterprise and business that you can't possibly manage after 5 years, which is what happens to lots of projects.
I
just wanted to ask Judy and Dee something, well, a couple of things. I might have missed something at the beginning because I was just out of the room. So I was just wondering if you've, sorry if you already said, but like where a lot of your films were shown, when you made them, I'm sorry if you don't answer that. But also like what you think about like accessing film and art in the north, because I'm from near Liverpool and like, I've got some friends who've done a lot of stuff in Liverpool, like Liverpool Small Cinema. An empty space for cinema. So I just thought it's interesting, because in London there's just so much access to arts and stuff, but it's interesting also if you said about PAC, because PAC is like the only place you want to watch independent film in Liverpool, you just go to PAC. Never really thought about it that much.
I've got the little cinema. The little cinema.
Do you think like then and now accessing it in Liverpool?
I think... I can't remember where we screened films. They would go, on demand. People, there was a network of film video workshops which would screen films in the various cities, so there'd be on demand out there. But it was kind of a different situation of sharing, really, than it is now.
Yeah, because we used to have the independent film festivals as well. And we were able to get stuff out through the independent film festivals. Yeah. And that seems to have dried up a little bit.
Well, we've got one on. We never got on anything on Channel 4, no. No. Open Eye did.
Mm-hmm.
Open Eye did.
I was just wondering, like, right now, now that the state withdraws from its responsibility of social reproduction, I mean, what is community work and collective practice? How can we avoid that these practices can be co-opted? You know, because like you end up doing what is expected from you, given that there's nowhere else to support. So you just like, you know, create means of, you know, self-employment and kind of.
Well, I don't work in film. Bee still works in film. I work in poetry now, and I get funding from the lottery and PH holds various, I'm still fundraising. But yes, the state isn't doing much at all. And in fact, the poetry group I work for, the local city councils, just had to pull out because the state isn't giving enough to city councils.
We don't get any money from the state to make any films. I mean, again, although I still work in films, I work with groups of people to make films. And then we try the best way we can to get those films made. Because if we think something is a real important issue, there'll be no question we've got to get there. And we'll draw on all our knowledge and people we know over the years to come on board to make the film. And then get it out there and screen it and distribute it. So that's the way. I mean, I'm quite fortunate also because I work through Blackburn House Women's Education Centre, which I have done for the last 25 years. And within that, I'm able to draw on their, access there and get things done through that way, whilst also training those other women that's coming through. And that's with Rohana's film. That was all done at Blackburn House with that group of young women. And we were, never cost us really anything. But, that's the way we're tending to work.
There's another
groups.
Production centre called the Charles...
Not the Charlie one.
The Lee Works. John Archer Hall.
Oh, yeah, John.
We've got John Archer Hall, that has the means of production. But yes. That, again, is only funded but for educational workshops through places like the lottery and grant funding.
Yeah.
There's a few funds screaming out to be made at the moment when we can't buy them.
And we try to get funds, like I got some funds from the Holt to make something and the heritage and, you know, so we're drawing on...
It's very piecemeal.
On, yeah, because it only lasts, it's never enough, but you'll make it work.
Are we answering your question? Sorry, babe.
I think like this force of like seizing the means of production have been, you know, like, I mean, during the late 70s, all across South Europe, like people were occupying factories and all big farms, and they kind of concluded that, well, actually, because this is just like a small, you know, experience, we cannot really overcome, you know, like this experience, and end up they I mean, Italy was also like very prolific in terms of like producing theory about this, but like they concluded that they were self-exploiting, you know, and so in the end you're just trying to fill the holes because there's no one else to kind of provide, you know, money to fund you.
I mean
I'm not saying that you should stop doing any collective work, but I think one should be aware of this, that we are, in the end, by community work and collective practice, that we are, like, working against us. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm working in poetry now.
I mean, it's very complicated, because once you start talking to commissioners, there is a lot of control they have. In some cases, and in particular now, they will say, well, actually, we want you to do this, which will probably go against what you actually want to do.
That's right.
And you may not have enough systems around you in order for you to enable to keep your voice and what you want to say. And I know lots of people who will go down that road and do what the commissioners want them to do. Mm-hmm. And I know lots of people who don't and choose, they will make the films themselves. So that you still have control.
Yeah, well,
and you still tell the story you want to tell.
Yeah, and you've got to be true to yourself.
Absolutely.
At all times. I mean, when we were given that, we were given that commission back in 1980 to make a film about the riots, and their brief was, oh, we want you to make this type of film about black youth over, you know, that image that they have over the, and we said no. We're not making that film, and the way we made the film, and it was still commissioned. I mean, because I set up this production company with the group of people, and they then had to employ us to make the film, and then through workshops we made the film what we wanted to say, or what they wanted to say. So we look at riots and how these kids all behave. We said no, and then we looked at riots, but we looked at the history of riots from 1919 and the riots and who benefit from the riots, and that was the brief that that group gave us, and that was the film we made about, you know, the beneficiaries and who benefit. It's not communities, it's not the rioters, and it wasn't about the film. What, you know, 1981 wasn't a race riot, it was a whole thing against the system. And that's what the film was saying. So we made the film that we wanted. I mean, it took they wanted it like that, and we took a whole year to make it. And so we were just eating up their money, but it was it was fine, and we shot it all on 16 mil. So you can imagine how, but we made, because we wanted it to be true to ourselves, and that's the film we made. And then we said in the end, if they show it, they show it. If they don't, we'll show it.
But do you think that things change so much, because I think
definitely
now, it's a completely different period, and you had in order to, there was great flexibility that you had that those commissioners gave, whereas now I think that there's a much smaller margin of flexibility.
Well, I think don't want to talk for you, but for me, I mean, we had at that time, like, I had people like Tariq and Stuart Hall, and they were big names that were coming behind us. And when, you know, we showed them that film, you know, we said, this is what we want to make, and they said, we, you know, we're behind you, and this is what. And so when Channel 4 was saying, oh, well, you haven't got, these young people haven't got the academic experience or the research, you know, those people came on board with us to do the research that we needed.
I think society is different as well.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem, we don't see, although these these million people marched the other day, it doesn't seem, it's too incoherent at the same time. I mean, it was, you know, what is that stuff anyway? What is that Brexit? It's not, you know, there's shit happening, like what about 5G? You know, we're being poisoned continuously.
Yeah,
there's so many other arguments we should be having. But that's, it just seems to be one great big distraction about this terrible, these terrible things that are happening to us. We've been kind of homogenised into something that's, it was like, it was just so, that's why I like it being seen, you know, because it feels so much more exciting. Is it just because I'm old, or am I making this up? Am I making this up?
Can I come in?
Mm?
Yeah.
I actually think that a lot is happening.
You do, good.
No, a lot is happening, and I think, you know, you've got the social movements for one. You've got all kinds of different kinds of gatherings of people, different kinds of axes of solidarity. I mean, I'm just thinking about...
we have Poland feminism, we have miners' strikes.
No, I absolutely agree that with financialisation you've got integrated global capital, and this has had an effect on subjectivity, and we know we've now specs of human capital, and it's extremely hard to find subjectivity with its capacities for resistance. But I think this resistance is going on, and I think there is huge solidarities going on throughout the world. In relation to class, race and gender, and how these come together in an intersectional way. And I'm thinking of the extraordinary woman who runs the showroom now,
Alvera.
Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking about this extraordinary event that I went to at Tate recently on axes of solidarity. I mean, so I just don't agree that it's just...
It's great.
I think But I just think, I'm thinking, because you mentioned Sankofa and Black Audio Collective, and I've heard someone like John Acumphra, in the context of the work that, say, the Otlis Collective have done, I've heard him often say, and I was present at those early meetings in the 70s and the 80s, that, you know, you have to try and get the means of production. Then you have to change the relations of production. Then you have to make sure that you have a... You reconstruct the division of labour and you go towards horizontality, which was talked about this morning. But the thing that they used to emphasise is that you've got to create new kinds of audiences that address different kinds of needs and desires, and you've got to create new needs and desires. And this is where theory is extremely important. You know, as... Angela Davis says that theory is it's a militant performance. I'm thinking of what happened, you know, the paper that was given at the Tricontinental, theory as a weapon. So Sankofa would say you have to create new audiences with new desires, and you have to identify new needs. And this is one way you can, with alternative forms of distribution, you can actually... This is a way in which you can produce different forms of valorization than that of capital. And I think this is going on, and this is what we have to kind of talk about, and this is where we have to kind of get a new political and ethical orientation. And I think it is going on, and we should recognize that it's going on and work to show how these solidarities are working and where it's going on, because it is going on. I mean, I go to so many different spaces across the city where this work is going on.
Great.
Yeah. Well, I entirely agree with you. I mean, it's like that group in Liverpool that we've got called, they're called Bedroom Productions.
Yes.
And it's a collective of young people that make these films overnight. And they grab, you know, and that's a new, and they screen their stuff to their audience who wants to see it.
Yeah.
And it's a group of young people. I mean, I mean, under copyright law, the stuff that they, you know, they put the music from here, you know, a cathedral, you know, and overnight they make these films and get them out. That's a new audience.
Yes, I just wanted to say, I mean, there's a huge amount of work going on at the moment looking at the therapeutic and the political coming from the global south. This huge amount of work which was touched on this morning to do with indigeneity and what we can learn about different ways of being and knowing, how we can produce knowledge differently, that's coming from, say, you know, the global south,
yeah.
For instance. There's so much that is going on that we need to draw on and talk about that is to do with the time, our present situation.
Definitely.
Because even when we look at the work from the 60s and the 70s, the important moment is the moment of when the spectator completes the work in the moment that they're actually viewing the work.
Yes.
So when you're looking at work from the 60s or the 70s or the 50s even, one is, as a spectator in the present, one's actually making a creative act in the present in terms of what one's living through in the present. And you can actually gain something from work in those moments, but bring what's going on in the present to it and help form some kind of solidarity.
And context.
And context, yeah. And move forward, because we have to.
Well, I think Rana, in her installation piece that she did for the biennial, that's exactly what she was doing with that group of young people, using the old material and the context that they're in. Here we have a new group of young people and what's happening to them and how they're perceiving things.
Yeah. I mean, I just wanted to say, I mean, there's, for instance, what's going on, I mean, this is a, what's going on in, I'm just trying to get this, there's so much going on in my head. I mean, just the Black Atlantic and the work that's going on around the Black Atlantic, for instance. The extraordinary work that this amazing philosopher, Denise Ferreira da Silva, is doing, for instance. There's so much important work going on. I mean, the work of somebody like Sylvia Winter, and the thinking that's coming out of rediscovering this work, say, of Sylvia Winter, for instance. Then you think of all the micro-political work that's going on, coming out of the schizoanalysts, which the Otlith have sort of linked into. Then I would have just mentioned the Otlith group curated this fantastic show a couple of years ago, which looked at, they worked with activism in India, and they looked at the extraordinary work that needs to be done in relation to the untouchables, the Dalits, in India, that still goes on today, because although the constitution was transformed, it's not being acted on. Then you think of, you know, the extraordinary things that are going on in relation to women all over the world, and the struggles that women are taking on. And then there's the LGBTQ+. So I'm just saying that there's lots going on that's very important. Sorry.
Yeah. I will say that as a contemporary voice with all those kind of issues and coming from the space of working within a collective, what is happening is that these issues are getting isolated to the academy, basically, and we're accessing them through the academy. And for us, it was through being in Soif and Uncomfortable, through being in institutions, as opposed to coming together as a grassroots collective. Also, all these kind of issues and groups are getting co-opted quicker. So I remember literally thinking about Black Lives Matter, thinking about everything that's gone on with queerness. Yeah, it's got co-opted so quickly. And it's got co-opted very quickly. Like, the turnarounds, I think, has been even quicker. And I think we're still fighting against neoliberal capitalism and this kind of sense of individuality, whereas kind of these individual maybe moments across those kind of issues may gain visibility, but on a kind of ground level it kind of doesn't change. And it's almost like a fad, I think. For example, with Black Lives Matter, the fact that in Ferguson, I think every year there's like one of the kind of protesters are dying mysteriously. However, that's kind of, it's not the kind of core issue anymore. We've moved on to something else. So I think even though, yes, there is a lot going on, we are seeing a lot of co-option. We are seeing like just the nature of capitalism working even, I think, harder and faster.
And indeed people dying mysteriously or getting lupus or getting,
I think we've got time for one last question. So,
back.
It's not really a question. I guess it's the sort of support of some points that have been made already.
of Sheffield independent film in the late 1980s, and so I'm having kind of deja vu, but I think in a sort of good way. One of the things that hasn't really been mentioned but was absolutely kind of fundamental to the workshop movement, or it may have been mentioned at 2 o'clock when I was doing something else, is the idea of integrated practice and the idea that actually, you know, the kind of means of production are connected to distribution and exhibition. But I have to say that even then, distribution was the sort of weak link. And it is true that there was a network of funded workshops and other independent groups who did circulate their work amongst each other. And, you know, we did kind of travel from Sheffield to Liverpool and vice versa. But actually, one of the things that is sort of heartening about today, I think, is yes, you know, we are in a very different time, and integrated practice, I think, sort of dissolved. And, you know, the Liverpool example is an interesting one, where kind of exhibition was hived off first into the 051 and then into FACT, and then, you know, production entities kind of carried on and survived as best they could. But I think we are now, you know, we have two things that we didn't have in 1986, 87, 89. We have a kind of re-emergence and proliferation of kind of alternative screening spaces, community cinemas, you know, lots of alternative venues now. And I agree that, you know, co-option is always a sort of looming problem for the independent sector in everything that we might do. But we, you know, but there is a kind of proliferation and a new interest in kind of screening and coming together. We also, you know, have a much better way of communicating with each other and getting the word out than we ever had at that time. You know, we do not have to kind of physically cross the Pennines now to kind of see each other's work. And that's true on a kind of global scale. So it's not that kind of distribution is sorted, but actually we do know that there is interest not only in kind of working in this kind of way, but also having access to both new and old work made through these means, and actually through digital technology and, you know, both the kind of more individual but also the more kind of public new collective spaces. Actually, it makes me, you know, I'm a bit sort of Pollyanna-ish. I tend to see the positive anyway, but I think that in terms of kind of distribution and access to audience, we have new opportunities. I do think, as has, you know, repeatedly been said today, you know, the kind of legacy and the ongoing care of that work, though, is something that we've barely started to scratch the surface of.
Thank you.
Maybe a good time to leave it there, unless you guys want to say anything back to that.
No. No.
Okay, well, thanks so much to the lovely panel, and thanks everyone for coming.
Thank you. Thank you, Cindy Nova. Thank you, Cindy Nova.
Thank you very much to Cindy Nova. Thank you to our morning panelists and speakers, Lorena Cervera and Juana Suarez. Thank you to Matthew Barrington, who, as always, has kept everything going brilliantly well. You are managing here with me, and I want to be a second person. Thank you to Janet McCabe, who designed the wonderful schedule for the day. We are going for a drink or two at the Tavistock Hotel Bar. Please join us. We can carry on having some conversations. If you want to make yourself known to anybody who spoke here today or didn't speak here today, then please join us. We go out of the building here. You take a left. You take another left. Keep going until you see the Tavistock.
I mean,
right.
I work as an activist in an urban
council
state.
Thank you very much for coming. I'm
pretty grassroots. People are working and just taking it on. Yeah. I can't talk enough. And it's not, there's nobody, most of, a lot of people in my radio space